Jenna, is there any place better than Target?
No. So let's talk about Target Circle. It's the same program you know and love now with automatic deals.
Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target?
So now when you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout.
Plus, with the unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price. And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Not me, that is for sure. So get this, Nair. Yes, Nair, the OG, has leveled up. They've got these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. I just used the coconut oil and vitamin E shower cream, and I seriously forgot I was in my own bathroom. It smelled like a spa. Plus, it's allergen-free, so it's gentle for your skin, and it worked in as little as 3 minutes, so no nicks, no cuts, and the smooth skin lasted days longer than shaving. Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all those nasty chemicals like phthalates and sulfates, so you can feel good about what you're putting on your skin. Have a me-time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And that's what you really missed with Jenna
and Kevin, an iHeartRadio podcast. We're back.
Here we are. Welcome. Oh.
Welcome to And That's What You Really Missed. You berated us. You reached us on every social media platform.
You would not leave us alone.
No, and we tried to ignore it.
Or did we?
But here we are. I don't know. It worked.
It worked.
Whatever you did worked.
Thanks for coming back. Thanks for making us come back. We're here with you, and we are excited to revisit this with new eyes.
Yeah, I think 2022 eyes are very different from even 2 years ago.
Yes.
And so it's nice to pick this back up, and I think Jen and I have a plan for this.
What's
for
that?
This version. We're going in depth. We're going to be very open. We're not going to sugarcoat. We're going to talk about everything. And I think ultimately, Jenna,
yeah.
What you and I talked about is that there was so much joy in the process of
yes.
making Glee.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, there are bad things, and we will talk about them.
Yes.
But there was a lot of good. And we want to explore that. We want to get into the details, the nitty-gritty of different departments and who the show impacted and affected. And so going into this first episode and to relaunching this whole thing, we were talking about who could we have.
Well, we figured we'd start at the top, right? Who better than the man, the myth, the legend himself, Ryan Murphy?
Ryan Murphy.
Honestly, I feel like there was a reckoning in the last 2 years in the best way possible. What you've seen in the media, what you've seen is just a snippet of all of the of the madness that went on around Glee, but there's so much good and there was so much joy. And this thing was honestly, at least the first couple of years, was made with so much love. And I'm just really excited to share that with you guys. And I feel like we've had this, you know, open conversation with Ryan Murphy over the last 2 years as well. And with all of that, I think everybody's going into this in with a new perspective of some sort. And that's why we're doing this. And who better to kick it off?
We just talked to Ryan for almost 3 hours.
He it was a very so great.
Open and honest conversation. And we learned a lot of things we never knew about behind the scenes.
Things. We asked a lot of things we had questions about that we have been dying to ask that we may never get those answers again. So, no.
And he was not shying away from answering any and everything.
Certainly
so,
not.
Buckle up. We hope you enjoy this. We sure did. We learned a lot.
And here's our kickoff episode.
Enjoy our conversation with Ryan Murphy.
Let's start at the very beginning. Ryan Murphy, for the people, everybody. This is wild.
For the people. This is Ryan's show today. Seeing as we have you, we're not going to let you go until we go through everything. And you signed off on that.
I did. I sort of told you both, like, you know, I've never really talked about Glee or the making of Glee. And, you know, for all of us, I think it was the beginning of a lot of things, the end of a lot of things. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to talk about all of it and say and answer anything that's asked of me. And then this is going to be like a really intense therapy session. So I have my Kleenex box nearby and
good.
I'm ready.
Wow. You have your Uggs on. You're on a couch. You're relaxed.
I have my Uggs on. I'm on a couch. I decided to treat this like a psychological experiment and...
We've all taken ayahuasca, yeah. And we're ready to dive real deep.
I'm ready to deep dive and answer any arcane. There's no question too small or too big.
Wow. I think we all need this. For some reason, Glee happened, what, over 15 years ago,
yes.
And it keeps coming back, and people won't let it die. So let's just do it.
Let's just start at the very beginning, right?
The very beginning. Yeah, I think... So 2007 or 2008, Nip Tuck was in the throes of success, still in the air.
Right.
I remember you did a pilot called Pretty Handsome with John Groff and...
Yeah.
You showed us.
Oh my God, Carrie Ann Moss. Yeah, you showed us.
I showed you guys.
And that pilot didn't go forward. How did you go from... What was this process like? Because the story we heard... was you met someone at a gym and got handed a script, and eventually that turned into Glee. But what was your experience of how did Glee happen coming off of Pretty Handsome and Nip Tuck still being on the air?
In the ether.
It's a great lesson that I always tell people, particularly young people, like every crushing no leads to the ultimate bigger yes. And that's exactly what happened in the case of Glee. So I had this big shiny hit called Nip Tuck. And when you have a hit like that, you know, pretty much the next thing that you do, particularly if you're doing it for the same network, they will say, okay, great, let's do that. So I put my heart into this show called Pretty Handsome with Joseph Fiennes. It was actually the first time I think Jonathan Groff had ever been before a camera. I remember saying, like, you can't look into the lens. Like, that's rule number one. And he was so charming and was, you know, typical Johnny fashion, like Olivier on take one.
Yes.
And so I did it. And it was very much like Transparent. It was like 10 years before Transparent. And we all loved it and thought it was great. It was about a male gynecologist who realizes he's a woman. And Dot Marie Jones was in it. And,
so
you know, it was just an amazing cast. And they called me up and they said, we love this. We think it's one of the best things that we've ever seen. We cannot sell advertising for it. The advertisers have already told us no. And we can't put it on the air. And I was really, really upset. And I think I took to my bed for 2 weeks. And right at the same time, I had started an overall deal at Fox with Dana Walden, who has gone on to be my big mentor and champion. Mm-hmm. And she made me have a dinner with her, and she said, you can't be depressed about this. You just have to keep going on, and you have to challenge yourself. And she said, what have you always wanted to do that you've never done? And I said, well, I've always wanted to do a musical. And she paused and she said, well, that's not going to work because there's never been a musical that worked on television. Like, there was famously this Stephen Bochco show called Cop Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a Melanie Griffith show around that time. I think it was set in Las Vegas that was people singing, but it didn't work. And I said, well, what if we do a musical that goes on sometime after American Idol or before American Idol? Because that
Which was the
big
biggest show
at the time. Yeah. Biggest yeah. show in the world.
Yeah.
So while we were having these conversations and I was trying to figure it out, like serendipity, I went to the gym and I was in a towel and a guy came up.
You better.
Mike Novak came up and handed me a script and he said, I have a feeling you were in show choir. Am I right? And I was like, yeah. I guess I've got a huge gay face in a towel in a gym. And I said, I was. And he said, my friend wrote this script and you should read it. And he gave it to me. And I didn't read it for a couple of weeks while Dana and I were continually trying to talk about, well, what is the musical to crack? Like, what is it?
Right.
At one point, it was going to be a Dracula musical. That would have gone over real great.
What?
And so then I finally read Ian's script on a plane. And in Ian's original script, it was a very dark comedy mm-hmm. that had kind of the idea of it. And Ian and I were both in choir. And Mr. Shu, I believe, is a crystal meth addict in Ian's script. So
wasn't
I said,
also like doing, was he like touching the children or
yes.
something?
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
It was like a very dark, it was sort of like Election. Remember that Reese Witherspoon
yes.
Election?
Yes.
But like the NC-17 version of show choir with like yeah. a weird protagonist who is unraveling. And as soon as I read it, I was like, okay, well, this is it. And I said, what if we, because what I loved was the idea of kids in high school. And one of the things that I have since learned in my career is it seems like shows that work or TV experiences that work very often feature people going through quote unquote first times, first kiss, first loss, first singing experience, on and on and on. So I kind of instinctively wanted to do something about firsts, and I wanted to do something after my transsexual show didn't go that was the opposite of that. Like, I wanted something very, very poppy and primary colors and blue sky and not dark. And I had done Nip Tuck and I had done Pretty Handsome. And I was like, I just need to do something optimistic. And so I convinced Ian to work on a draft that sort of leaned into all of that stuff. And we presented it to Dana and she actually liked it. And she said, I think that this could actually work. So she was the first champion of it, just as the idea. And then we started writing that, and it sort of took 6 months to write it, and we wrote it, and then the interesting thing was we turned it in, and Kevin Reilly, who had hired me at FX and was now running Fox with Peter Liguori, said, I love this pilot, it's weird, it'll probably never go, it has one huge problem, and knowing you, I'm shocked and disappointed in you. And I said, oh my God, what? And he goes, there's no bad person in here. Like, all these people are nice and optimistic. And he goes, there's no one to hate. Mm. And I said, you're right. And then Ian and I talked. And within 15 minutes, I said, I know what it is. It's a horrible cheerleading coach, like Jane, a Jane Lynch type person. And I had worked with Jane before.
Brilliant.
But we kept calling her Jane Lynch-like. So then we put Sue Sylvester into the pilot script. And if you notice, going back, that character is not in it a lot.
Right.
And that's why, because we just had to put it in there to get it greenlit. And then Kevin was like, Eureka, you've done it. So then we got it picked up and we were wow. off to the races. But it was a very interesting, bizarre
yeah.
way to make something.
And I remember you, when you would sort of tell us like the short version of that story back in the day, when you'd be like, I walked into Fox and they were like, okay, sure, go for it. But I was like, who in their right mind would be like, yeah, this TV person who's created all these dark shows and this pilot that we love that we can't actually greenlight, we want you to go for this thing that's probably the hardest thing to get success with. And they were like, yeah, go for it on multiple levels.
Well, like, do you feel like you were out of your element or in your element? Because we always kept, like, when we were doing press after the pilot, everybody was like, this is so not Ryan Murphy. This is the opposite of what Ryan Murphy does. Like, do you feel like you were in or out of your element creating this show?
I really felt like I was in my element because, you know, I had kind of lived that show in a weird way because there were parts of me in all of the regular parts, the small group of regulars. Then it became like, you know, Night of a Thousand Stars eventually. But there were like five key parts. And I think there was a lot of me in all of those parts because, you know, Ian and I had really were working on just the ideas of it. Mm. And I felt very personal to all of them, you know. Mm. And, you know, I started this business writing Popular, which was also a high school show that was a comedy. Mm-hmm. But then I became the Prince of Darkness. And I think that what the town does is you are your last hit, right?
Right. Yep.
So then you're suddenly that thing. And I never thought it was true. And it was a very interesting time in the life of show business in Hollywood, because if you look back at it now, you know, really the two biggest champions of Glee were Dana Walden and Jen Salke. Jen has gone on to run Amazon, and these two powerhouses were the ones. I wouldn't say they were battling the guys, because the guys, you know, Kevin Reilly and Peter Rice and Peter Liguori were always interested in it. But it was a very interesting long battle. But for some, there was something about it that as soon as we made it, I just knew that it was special. And I kept just saying to everybody, just get it on the air. Mm. And if it gets on the air, I know it's going to work. So, you know, that was back when there was such a thing as a pilot season. So we made the pilot and we turned it in. And you had to do things called test screeners. So we took Glee, Dana and I and Jen, and we went to some place in Studio City with a test audience and we showed it to them. And I think it literally got the worst scores in the history of the
program.
What? Really?
It bombed. It was just like complete bomb. And the thing that at the end of it, the people didn't realize it was a musical. So they kept, there was like, you know, checked which category you best, how you would market this show. And they not a single person, and there were 36 people in that room, thought that it was a musical. A lot of people thought it was a satire, and they wrote that, which it kind of was.
Yeah. It was making fun of itself.
Yeah. So then there was the powerful person in the world who really didn't understand it. And there was back then there were all these different levels of programmers. There was also a lot of, I'll just say it, there was a lot of homophobic fear about this show. Mm. Mm. There was one very powerful person within the corporation who would repeatedly at screenings of it when they were showing it before it was picked up, who kept calling it the fag show, which made everybody in the executives who had championed it furious. Mm. And that was back in the day where you could say this in a room full of people and nobody would bat an eye.
Of course, especially if you were super, super powerful.
Super powerful in your Dockers, you know, standing there. And that, you know, like this person also came up to me at different, no matter, it was just hilarious. Like it was one of those things where there were like really five people who believed in it. And then there was Joe Early, who did the marketing of it, instantly got what it was. Yes. He was the one who, working with me, came up with the colorscape of the yellows and the reds and all of you guys doing the L's on your head.
It was genius.
You know, so it was very simple, and Joe and I worked a lot on that concept. But the thing about it that was great is it had all these guardian angels. It had Dana, first and foremost, who, after that disastrous test screening,
I can't believe
took
that.
Me out for a drink, and she said, "You know what? I don't care. I don't care what they think. They're wrong."
What version was the test? Was it the one that actually aired?
No, the version of the test had the infamous long disco dancing segment with Mr. Shu as a child.
Yes, right.
And I will say, like, after that disastrous screening, the good thing about that screening was it sort of made everybody put on their, okay, well, how do we convince people that this is a mainstream concept? And it was, the idea was if you take that out and get right to the, you know, because that was polarizing, because the costumes were like based on Copacabana. It was very, very odd.
Yeah.
And so that was the first thing to go, and not much after that. And once that we lifted that out, I think it's since been seen in like DVD cuts and things like that.
Yeah.
Right.
We took that out, and then people were more comfortable with it. And then we didn't make any changes at all. And then the interesting thing was, I don't know if it was based on my relationships. I think so. And also just because the, like, Dana and Jen and everybody had been the ringer through it. We got like the first 13 ordered. And that was a magical thing because, you know, we got to make those first 13 episodes. No one had seen it. No one had watched it. And we were on the Paramount lot.
Right.
Having the time of our lives.
Bubble.
Yeah, we were making it in a real bubble. Mm-hmm. And it was the only thing. I was working on Eat, Pray, Love with Julia Roberts at the time. But, you know, it was very, very singular. I don't even remember how many of those did I direct. 3 of the 13, I think?
Probably,
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Maybe 3 or 4. But I was... I just remember making it and not really caring if it was going to be a hit or a bomb because I knew that the first 13 would get on the air. And I thought, well, maybe this is going to be like a Freaks and Geeks thing where, you know, the 13 will air and then it will be canceled, but people will look back on it fondly. Because I knew that it would mean something to anybody who had been in show choir.
Right.
Yeah, what were your expectations?
None.
Hmm.
None. And, you know, there was it. My expectation was actually when we aired the pilot, it aired in May, I think right around the American Idol final.
Yeah, it was right after the season finale of American Idol.
Yeah. Right. And I thought, I don't know how this is going to do. And it did. And I remember the next morning, and it was that, you know, back then, this was not that long ago, but so long ago, you know, you'd get the call, well, it did okay. It didn't do great, or, you know, but we still love you. Mm-hmm. We hope that you don't look at this as discouraging. It's okay, and you got your baby scene, and yeah. So it was sort of. I always thought it was going to be like that. Like I thought it was going to be niche because, you know, I had gone through niche before with Popular, you know, which aired for 2 seasons and had a very small loyal old audience. Back then, we would call it culty.
Yeah.
But you look at the ratings for those shows that are culty, if those ratings existed today, Popular was more, would be like Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Like more Absolutely. And more people were just watching television and the ratings were so high compared to now. So I think I remember it. The pilot aired. I got on a plane and flew to Bali.
Right.
And I just thought, well, that's what it's going to be. It's going to air in the fall and it's going to be something that we loved making and we were all proud of. And it's just going to kind of be a culty thing. And that's that. And I had no expectation for the back 7 episodes, although I had things in mind. And I knew that if it did get picked up, I was going to do a Madonna episode. And that was going to be my big swan song. I'd come here to do what I was going to do. And that was it. So I had no expectation.
The gay checklist.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I had no plans other than that. And
wow.
I don't know how you guys felt. I remember the last day of shooting. I remember getting the cast together and saying something because I had a really bad experience with the Nip Tuck ending, you know, and going through something that burned really bright and then everybody kind of falling apart. And I remember giving a speech about staying close and being in it for the work. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember.
I believe I cried.
Yes.
You did that a couple times.
God help me. I probably did. But you know what I really remember about that time was, you know, even you're saying that I showed you guys the Pretty Handsome pilot. Like, there was a time where, you know, almost all of the cast was known in certain circles, Broadway circles, Jenna, certainly Kevin from your musical background, but nobody really knew a lot about the cast. And we spent every day together.
Yes.
We had weekends together.
Every waking moment.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I would bring you guys into this little black room that was the size of a closet, like 13 of you.
Yes.
Yep.
And I would screen rough cuts just so that you would get excited.
Yes.
And people would be cheering everybody else's musical numbers. And
yes.
it was a very wonderful, you know, I was single
special
at
time.
The time.
Right.
I had not, you know.
You sure were.
But also Glee led me to my marriage, which is another story. But it was like it was my life. It was Julia Roberts and you guys. And
yes, no, I remember.
I remember her showing up at Paramount, and we were
like, Julia. Yeah.
We all did the stupidest things I could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Stop talking.
No, Kevin and I remember, we talk about this a lot. Like, it was a very much a bubble. The world hadn't seen the show yet. We didn't know what it was going to be. Our expectations were none.
In the middle of it, the pilot airs, and it does well. And all of a sudden, there's these commercials of Glee was watched by 15 million people, and the song's number one on iTunes. We're like, huh?
Well, we did the mall tour, this Hot Topic mall tour.
The mall tour. But see, you know, like the thing that I'm glad that you remember the headlines as being good, because I remember those headlines as, well, it got 15 million viewers, but that's only because people who are watching American Idol forgot to turn on the channel, so it's not a
totally.
Real thing.
I remember thinking that because I was always sort of the numbers guy. We're like the cast. I would always report back to the cast like what our ratings and music were doing.
Right.
And I remember being like, okay, well, they're like really milking this. We don't really know yet. But we, in every department, I think it wasn't just us. It wasn't just you. In every department, the crew, production, behind the scenes, everyone felt the same thing where no one talked about if it was going to be successful or not. We were just having the time of our lives. We'd show up, we'd make the crew laugh, we'd have to do these crazy musical numbers with the incredible Andrew Mitchell on Steadicam.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was, everyone just felt, was all
happy.
In
was
on
happy.
Making this thing work.
Yeah.
That you were creating the formula as it was happening.
Yeah.
And we were all just sort of like, I don't know what this is going to be. I don't know who this is for, but we love it. It felt like it was for us.
Right.
And
yeah.
You know, it felt like you were very hands-on with us from the very beginning, where you gave us, I don't know, I think 3 or 4 speeches like the one you talked about, where, and you did explain sort of vaguely about coming off of this Nip/Tuck experience, where you wanted to make sure that you handled this in a way that you felt was better or healthier or a more correct way to deal with the cast. And
right.
I think because we were young and completely unknown, and I don't know, 90% of us completely green, that you would talk us through, like gently sort of hold our hands through, if there's success, if we're lucky enough to have any success, this is sort of what will happen.
Right.
And if it does happen, this is how we should handle it together as a group.
Yeah.
And then when we did start to build momentum and get success, you would sort of check in and be like, okay, here's where we are. This is very rare air. And
this may never happen again.
Yeah. And like, this is, and that was for you. That was for us. That was for everyone. And I remember, I feel like had you not been there with the foresight to sort of talk us through that, you had been running shows before.
Right.
But you also didn't know at the time you were about to be running this $1 billion business. So you didn't know either.
I knew nothing.
Yeah. So you know how to run a successful show that was, had a core fan base and was getting picked up. And that's what you were concerned about for us, which was, I think, very helpful. Mm-hmm. But then it sort of exploded into this behemoth.
Yeah, it was like the best of times, the worst of times. For me, the thing that I was very aware of was, okay, I hope this is a TV show that's like loved and, you know, along the lines of my so-called life at best. So I had only had really one hit at that point, and let me tell you, it was a cable hit, and so it was not like it was a smaller outre hit. And then to go from being like, okay, you're a showrunner to you're the manager of a billion-dollar brand, literally within a month.
Yep.
Because what happened was the show, I was in Italy shooting with Julia when the shows that we had had in the can started to air in September. And it was one of those things where it came on and with every episode, it built and built and built until I think by episode 3, when Kristen Chenoweth came on the show, it had just become massive. A phenomenon that sometimes you see like something just explodes out of the gate and then it's there. So I was getting all of these calls from executives saying, oh my God, it's doubled in the ratings. It's tripled in the ratings. And then the fall award nominations came out. And then the music started to become literally its own industry. And that was overwhelming for me because, you know, pretty much for the first 3 years, any song that was on Glee, I handpicked. And it was because I loved the song and I could sing it. Mm-hmm. In my car, like it was just like I would have CDs, mixtapes, and things like
right.
It was just I was a fan,
right?
And the show was about being a fan and a love of pop music and Broadway music and
classic rock,
all of
who
it.
Knew was,
all of it,
And a lot of that was Brad's stuff. You know, Brad was interested in the Springsteen stuff and the Speedwagon stuff, and it was what was interesting about it was so then it became. Suddenly, like, okay, now you have a show that I believe by the time it hit the spring was the number one show in the world. Then you had this other component, which is the music, which for a long time the record held where the Glee cast was, you know, the number one recording artist in the world.
I think it held until last year.
Until Drake snatched it away.
Yeah.
With his Canadian hands. You know, I love that Drake.
He also played a wheelchair-bound student in a high school show.
Yes,
so
he did, Kevin.
We
he did
that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it was that thing that happened, which in hindsight was probably a mistake, which was let's go on tour. Because what happened the first season, we had fun doing the little, you know, the Radio City Music Hall.
Right.
Thing that felt like da-da-da-da-da-da. It was silly and crazy, but then to go and then you guys became like little Taylor Swifts, like that became this thing
wild.
And it was I was very overwhelmed by the three-headed Hydra element of it because I knew nothing and I had never had any experience doing this right. I had never had any experience of running something on this level.
I mean, there's no training for that unless you've actually done it before. There's no school. It'll be like, here are the things you need to know when you're running a billion-dollar business that is TV and music and touring.
Well, this is the thing that's very, I think, dumb about Hollywood, right? Is you can be a person who is writing a script. You are sitting in a room by yourself with your Starbucks and a sad, broken-down laptop. You can write something, you can turn it in, and then you can have a corporation say, here's $1 billion, go have fun. And you're like, I don't know how to hire people. I don't know how to manage people. I don't know how to, how am I supposed to do all this while working on the creative element of the show? Mm-hmm. It's truly like.
You still have to turn in 22 episodes.
Right.
Back then, 22.
And the three of you wrote those for
all together. Yes, for the first two seasons. Yes. So it was. It's just, I wish that there was some sort of formal training on how to be a showrunner and you weren't given the keys to the kingdom unless you learned how to not just manage your time, not just manage other people, but also how to manage your own mental health. Because I don't know any CEO in the world who becomes CEO without like at least 10 years of training.
Right.
So it's absolutely insane to be able to, you know, manage something, let alone a cultural phenomenon. It was very, very, very difficult for me. And I remember feeling like I failed a lot, and I did fail a lot. And I have, regrets about that, about I shouldn't have done a lot of those things. I shouldn't have agreed to a lot of those things. But at the same point, I'll never forget that opening night at Staples Center. It was insane. It was like, check that off the bucket list.
Right.
But there was a cost to that. You know, there was, I can't even imagine, and I mean, I do imagine, but like for you guys having to not just do 22 episodes a year of a 1 hour, but record the musical numbers while in choreography between takes. I mean, thank God you were all so young. But
we didn't know any better.
Fresh and young and sprightly.
Yes.
Uninjured.
But you know, back then there was no conversation about mental health.
No,
there was no conversation about
none.
None of that stuff.
We really want to dive into that on this podcast too, about, yeah, you know, like taking care of yourself and what and how Hollywood does generate this like go, go, go kind of hustle culture that you really do have to look out for yourself, and some people don't even know how to.
Yes.
And well, I think for us, it was like everything was so overnight for you, for us, like this was all brand new territory and we couldn't say no. We didn't know how to say no in a way.
That's how I felt. I could not say no.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for once, it's so hard to get a job. You finally get a job, you get hired on the show, and then it's successful. And then on top of that, it means a lot to people. You know, like you hope, yeah, to get a job and you hope the check clears and you get to keep going back every day. But at the same time, we're now, you know, hearing from people like what you hoped for the show. It did find its audience and it was a lot bigger than you ever could have imagined. And it's like, I think we come from the world of, especially the theater world with Jenna and Leah, where it's like you just put your head down and work.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
you say thank you and you go full out whenever you're asked to work. And so I had the same experience. And the only gauge I had that we were probably doing more than what was normal was sort of from the crew. They're like, anything you do after this is going to be easier.
Jenna, let's talk about one of our favorite places, Target. This is where like Austin and I go on dates. We will run through the aisles of Target. I love the book selection. Seriously, this is our favorite place to go together. We go all the time. And specifically, Target Circle. It's the same program you know and love, now with automatic deals.
Exactly. Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target?
Now when you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout.
Plus, with unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you save an extra 5% your way every day. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circlecard.
Jenna, the weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees.
Yes, it is, and I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. And luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more.
And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes. We love that.
I just got the silk skirt, and then I also got the 100% organic cotton striped sweater. It's great quality for that price. I literally shop here all the time now because it is just undeniable.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/really for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/really to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/really. Let's talk about something we can all relate to. Hair removal. Not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Between Nick's cuts and razor burn, the worst. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. Nair's new scents have turned my bathroom into a spa. My favorite is the soothing aloe and water lily body cream. It smells so good. Plus, it's
It's designed for lingering freshness, so I smell and feel good for the rest of the day. And who doesn't love that? Nair's new shower and body creams are super easy to apply and work in as little as 3 minutes, and my smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. You can use it on your legs, arms, underarms, even your bikini area, which is perfect with summer right around the corner. I just went on a trip to New York to visit my family, and I used Nair before I left. I didn't even need to pack a razor because I knew my legs would be smooth the entire trip. So check out the new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. So smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
You know, I do want to amend one thing that I just said because I was thinking about it, about, you know, the truth of the matter is I did say yes, that the responsibility is on me. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why I said yes to all of these things. Because when I first started off in the business, you know, as a gay guy, I would go to meetings with executives and some of them would literally imitate my voice. Like, it was rough. It was really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm never going to be a success. I'm never going to get a job. My show was canceled the first two seasons after Popular. After that, I struggled. So I knew what it was like to have a weird sensibility and to not work. So once you get a green light and you're driving a very fast car, if the next light is a green light, it's human nature to go through the green light, to take the yes, because it may never come back again.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And of course, I've since realized that that's probably was not the way to be. But just for my own life, I was like, well, this could be the end. So the only time I ever said no was in the middle of the third season. They really did want to do a Darren Criss Dalton Warblers spinoff. And what? I said, I don't think I can do that.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, we were talking about doing a Warblers spinoff. Wow. And I said, I don't have the bandwidth. I can't do it.
Right.
And I should have done it, actually, looking back on it. What I wouldn't kill to have done that show, because it would have been great.
It would have been really great.
It would have been great.
It would have been great.
And it would have solved a lot of other problems. But I just would like to emphasize again, and I've said this to you, you know, we had an interesting thing that happened in my life when Naya passed away. It was a moment where all of us were kind of brought back together for a while in grief, and we finally all got to say, you know what I really think of you, and you know what I really think you did, and you know how I really felt about that experience. And it was really interesting for me to hear the truth that you guys had, which was, you know, we had started it in such a tight, loving way. And then as it went on and it became bigger, I sort of felt like I just became so overwhelmed by the business aspect of it that I became almost like an absentee father who shows up at the end of the day and pats the kids. And I had no idea to think that you guys were like, where did Dad go?
Right.
Why? Mm-hmm. What? Where did you go?
Yes.
And where I was at was I was in meetings looking at Glee merch, trying to pick the right color of blue, or planning the tour, or dealing with the ratings, or the award show stuff.
Oh, he hates us.
Yes.
He's over us. He doesn't want to be around us.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to go through that experience with you guys not so long ago, to sort of sit and be like, huh,
yeah
I kind of fucked that up. And I wish I had been more present. I wish I had known. I wish I had known how to be a proper parent. Like, I did not know. I was making it up as I was going along. And the interesting thing about that whole experience was that it really did prepare me for parenting. It taught me a lot about how to be with young people, what to do and what not to do. And also, more importantly, like, the most important thing is the human connection. And all the other stuff doesn't matter. Like, the tour should not have mattered. And I wish I had just sat my ass on that set and enjoyed the experience and was there, just because I remember sometimes when I would show up later and waft in my black vampire outfits and just sit there, that, you know, like, I remember just, like, you guys would look at me like, mm-hmm.
There was just a disconnect, right?
There was a disconnect. And then, but slowly you would all, I would, you know, be sitting there, and slowly the next thing you know, we'd be sitting there singing Brandy Monica songs, yep, like we did when we were making the pilot. And it felt like, oh, that feeling that we all had, the love that we had for not just each other, but what we were doing, was still there. And I think a lot about, and you know, and also I had I've never been as close to a cast. I've never tried to be as close to a cast, because I think that all of our lines, like, were we friends? Was I your boss? I was actually, the thing that people also think about showrunners is like, you know, we actually all worked for the same person. We were all employees of Fox. I was not your boss. I was an employee, although I was given this sort of position of power that I really was not prepared for. But yeah, it was particularly those beginning years were really, really heady and overwhelming. But I have to say, I look back on it with a real great degree of affection, because for every bad moment, there were like 100 great moments. And the thing that I remember so vividly was I had a house account at the Chateau Marmont, and I cannot tell you how many nights we as a group shut that place down.
Oh, yes.
And,
I
mean, we had a ball. We had a ball. And I remember even some of the first award shows we went to as a group. We won't name them, but I just remember us having a sense of what is happening. Like, it was fun.
It was.
It was so fun. It was. And we had a ball, and
we did.
We were just always together. We were always together. Well, whether it was filming at dinner, going to those award shows.
We were together more than we were with our own families. And I think you're right, Ryan. Like, thanks for sharing that. I feel like in a parallel universe, we were going through the same thing where we weren't prepared for what was happening in our lives, and we weren't prepared for it. And we loved this show. And we, you know, I look back with very fond memories now. A million good things outweigh the one bad thing in the press that we see these days. You know, a million great things that weren't talked about. And I think that's what we want to do on this show, is share all of those. But, you know, in this parallel universe, like, the show was ours for those first 13, 20 episodes or however many we did before the world kind of took it. And that was for us to make for them in many ways. Like, it changed many lives. It saved lives. And I'm so grateful for that, because it kept us going in those really hard end seasons of, like, people are still hanging on and still with us and still really enjoying this. So we do it for them. But early on, like, it was ours. And then all the power and everything was kind of like, it became so external. And
yes,
that was like
did.
An incredibly difficult shift that none of us, I think, had the time or energy to process at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We were so exhausted, and we were still working. You started Horror Story at that point. Like, there were a million things going on that, like, nobody got to sit and process until you come to a point where you lose one friend, you lose two friends, you lose three friends, you lose crew members, you lose all these really important people in such a momentous time in your life, that you go back and go, what was it really about? What was it that made it so special, that gives you that feeling of, like, I remember when we went to the upfronts for the first time and we watched that trailer that we had made, and I was bawling, and they're like, everybody's laughing at me, but I was like, I love this thing. I get it. Like, I got it before I think some people got it, and I was just so attached to it, and attached to all of us and this little family that we had made. So
yeah, I think I agree with you. Like, I look at back at that period, and I remember being emotional about every cut. Like, showing you guys and sitting in those rooms and crying. And I think if you look back on it, it was a very interesting group of people, because all of us had something in common. And the thing that, when I look back, is we all were kind of nerds, and we all felt unloved and unseen, not just maybe in our families, but by the business.
Mm-hmm.
We all were like these kind of people that had weird, unique talents that were unseen. And finally, we got to show them. And then, against all odds, people loved us after hating us for so long. At least that's how I felt.
Right.
And that's a very emotional thing that we went through, because we were kind of united. We were all marginalized people. And suddenly, we became the establishment and the trendsetters. And that also can screw with your ego.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was also very interesting and bizarre to
yes.
me.
Yes.
And a lesson learned. But yeah, I just, you know, it's that thing I always think like, God, I really did love it. And if I could, those 2 years, I will say, from the making of the Glee pilot probably to 2011 were without question the happiest years of my life, without a doubt. Wow. I look back on that time and I think,
wow,
that's when I was doing Glee. That's when I met my better, I mean, I'd been friends with my better half, but you know, I started dating him because he was dating some guy who was like 20 years old. And he called me up after a long time where I hadn't spoken to him. And he said, can you get me Glee tickets for my guy?
No.
Stop.
And I'm like, you've got to be kidding.
Stop.
And so I'm like, okay. So I got him tickets to the Radio City Glee thing.
Wow.
I was, you know, chain smoking at the time. So I was rail thin and I was wearing mm-hmm. this Jill Sander coat.
Yep.
And I looked good for like 2 weeks of my life, and that was the period. And then he saw me.
I remember.
He was like, you remember the skinny mini? And then he was like, who is, what happened here? So that's how I started to date David. We went out later that night, and then we got
both
married
have
and
Davids.
Had three kids. Yes, we
You're
do.
Both married to David.
That's right.
David's. But Cute. It's sort of, that was a great period in my life of, listen, there were battle royales, but it was fun because, you know, again, I get back to, it was the first big success, mm-hmm. the first moment in the spotlight where, you know, we were all kids, I think, knowing all you guys who were singing in front of mirrors with hairbrushes.
A million percent.
And then you get to be in a global stage doing something like that. Yeah. It was a wondrous time for
it
me.
It was a constantly, every single day was like all of our wildest dreams coming true. I feel like, as easy as it is now to look back and be like, yeah, here are things we could have done differently. I also feel like in the beginning, by you putting yourself out there to be our friend, you know, and be that close to us for better or for worse, it did make us feel safe and protected, though. It did allow us to show up every day and to show our unique abilities and talents and skills that nobody else cared to see before. And so I do think because of that, because of the tone you set, that, yeah, even if we hadn't seen you for a while and you'd come out set, we'd still run over to you because you felt like a foundational aspect of who we are or were in relation
right.
to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. you allowed us to be all of those things. You pushed us to be our better selves and get our talent out there as much as possible in the very beginning. Yes, we're retired. Yeah. Retired.
Yeah. And then of course it was that thing where, you know, I also had, I remember like, I was the person that also had to be the disciplinarian about some of these things,
yes.
like, you know, laying down the law, which is absolutely absurd
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Like, you know what it should have been? There should have been some person who was just in charge of schedules and personalities, and it is like, you know, there was no
that should have been Telly's job from
the- yeah
exactly
so true.
And but you know, like, I'll just speak graphically and we can cut it out, you know, like if you want, but I started off that job as a writer and a producer, and halfway through that job, because of the phenomenon that it became and the things that then happen when you're a part of a phenomenon, and some of them are good, some of them are bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to deal with things that are absolutely batshit crazy out of my knowledge. Like, I had no idea about how to handle domestic violence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea how to handle addiction.
Right.
I had no idea how to handle unwanted pregnancies. I had no idea how to do any of these things. So I was in this role of like the boss, but also a friend and actually loving
yep.
everyone. And then it was just very, very overwhelming. And
yeah.
Again, it really did teach me about parenting and what not to do, what to do.
Yeah.
And
crash course.
Yeah. And I'm just so relieved and thrilled that at the end of the day, and again, I'll go back to the Naya thing, which was incredibly healing, but I'm glad that we all got to have these, it was like a couple of weeks to really talk about what Glee did to us and what Glee did for us. And yep. those are two very different things.
Yes.
And it was really healing and
yes.
getting to, 'cause you, and I would tell you guys like, okay, you had that feeling, but did you know that when that was going on, I was doing X, X, Y, Y, and you guys had no idea because I would always keep that stuff from you for the most part. But
that was
interesting to share what I was going through too, because so many times I think you guys would think that I was just this sort of automaton dressed in Comme des Garçons who would come in and level edicts, but it wasn't that. I was torn up and struggling and trying to figure it out.
Jenna, let's talk about one of our favorite places, Target. This is where, like, Austin and I go on dates. We will run through the aisles of Target. I love the book selection. Seriously, this is our favorite place to go together. We go all the time. And specifically, Target Circle. It's the same program you know and love, now with automatic deals.
Exactly. Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target?
Now when you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout.
Plus, with unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you save an extra 5% your way every day. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms, applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card. Let's talk about something we can all relate to. Hair removal. Not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Between Nick's cuts and razor burn, the worst. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. Nair's new scents have turned my bathroom into a spa. My favorite is the soothing aloe and water lily body cream. It smells so good. Plus, it's designed for lingering freshness, so I smell and feel good for the rest of the day. And who doesn't love that? Nair's new shower and body creams are super easy to apply and work in as little as 3 minutes, and my smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. You can use it on your legs, arms, underarms, even your bikini area, which is perfect with summer right around the corner. I just went on a trip to New York to visit my family, and I used Nair before I left. I didn't even need to pack a razor because I knew my legs would be smooth the entire trip. So check out the new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. So smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I found it interesting when we did you the night when Naya went missing, you called me, Ryan, and I remember thinking, because at that point we were all distraught and, you know, wondering what was happening. And I remember in the sense that I had anytime I talked to you, you always talked about Glee with sort of this, I don't know if it was anger or it definitely wasn't positivity. It was sort of like, ugh, I'm over it. Everything's annoying. Everyone's whatever. And you called me, and I was sort of like, look, I don't know how it came up, but I was like, I don't know what impression you have of the show, but it has brought a lot of us a lot of good and a lot of positivity and a lot of joy. And then from there, you and I talked every day for, I don't know, almost a month.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly it turned into, you know, what do we all have to lose by not talking to you directly and to each other about the things that brought us together and then what sort of took us apart.
Right.
And it was very interesting also to like watch your transformation, sort of every phone call of also working through things the way we were also all working through things. And I felt like it was very, and it was such odd timing, but made sense that it's like, of course, Naya's going to just have us talk about everything, throw everything out there as she would. Mm-hmm. And it was through grief, like you said, be able to completely sort of like open up all the wounds from everyone, mm-hmm. and just spill it. And you were like, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I will sit there and I will take it because I want everyone to know that I'm listening and hearing what they're saying and I'm accepting, mm-hmm. you know, their experience.
Yeah.
And I was on the other side of it. And it is interesting now to hear how you've also like shifted and had this more, you know, positive outlook, because I think it's so easy to get weighed down, especially externally, by all like the shit people say who weren't involved in it at all.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we spent years having just incredible, incredible, positive, joyful experiences and getting to do crazy ass things. Like in one weekend, we performed on Oprah and then went to the White House and hung out at the White House and then performed at the White House.
Yes, we did.
And it was like we were
or
doing...
rather you did. I was just there.
You were there. But...
Like, yeah,
we
were
doing insane things, and there were so many great things that we.
Yeah.
And the reason we're always going to be connected like this and so deeply is because we only have each other to relate to in this.
Right.
Because
right.
Nobody else went through this, and we all went through a very specific set of circumstances. And so I think that's also why we feel things so deeply with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where the highs are high and the lows are low is because, like family, it's like, well, I have no one else to relate to on this. So like I either hate you or I love you, and I can say I hate you because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And right. So it's sort of that high school drama that, you know, doesn't ever end unless you face it head on, which
right.
you sort of spearheaded.
I have a
that was an interesting switch for me. It also other things started to happen at that time, right? I mean, I think the thing for me is like that idea of being a part of a cultural phenomenon and sort of going so high that once you're so high, you can only come down. And the
yep.
feeling coming down is not good for anybody. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
And then the media starts to take, you know, shots at you and punish you for the thing that they actually rewarded you for identically
mm-hmm.
6 months before.
Right.
So, and then...
You did warn us of that, by the way. I distinctly, but I guess we were super young, but you did... walk us through those things. But until it happens, it's sort of unbelievable
yeah.
and theoretical.
I think the thing that happened for me was there was a turning point for me where I was in it, and then, you know, that thing where you're like the gay kid who, oh, what do you mean you're going to make my dream horror show and green light that? Yes. What do you mean I can go do the normal heart? Yes. Like, I just was so thinking that I would never work again that I took the yeses.
Yep.
And then I started to build this business that I've really enjoyed. And that kind of took me further out to sea.
Right.
And then I think you guys felt further estranged from me because physically I wasn't there creatively. Then, you know, we added a writer's room and it became a bigger thing. And I think the thing that happened for me, to be blunt, was, you know, Corey died. And then after Corey's death and I had to plan a memorial service, I was like, I don't know how to do this anymore. I don't know what to do. And
right.
it was so painful and dark. And I think we all felt that.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was also a very large crew who had been with us from the beginning, who was
very little turnover.
Yeah. Almost no turnover. It was a family and people
yes.
wanted to keep working. And, well, not everybody. There were a few that didn't. But I just think that after that, I was sort of like Elvis has left the building.
Yes.
I think my spirit had gone out of it.
Yes.
And I was so devastated by his death
yeah.
That I had to step away from my own mental health, even though I didn't call it mental health at the time.
Right.
So it did become like this sort of thing where there was a lot of space between us. But then recently what has happened is most of us got back together in a very adult, good way and had adult conversations.
Yeah.
You guys are adults now. You're not kids.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of that was a shift in all of your lives. You have partners, you have children, you process it differently.
Totally.
And then now, you know, Glee is on Hulu, it's on Disney Plus, and every day there are people who reach out to me about my 8-year-old is watching the show, and these young people have no memory of it being in the media and a cultural phenomenon. They're just loving the musical experience of it. So that to me has been sort of reinvigorating, and like, oh, the work lasted and the work's tested the, you know, and it's also hilarious to me, some of the stuff that we did in those later seasons that was so mercilessly attacked by the press, for example. Remember when we did those scenes with Sue as Jigsaw and like the puppet, and Jane had the Hurt Locker?
Yeah.
I believe that there were many columns written about that I should be killed for those scenes. But now they are among the most beloved, watched, streamed. Like, so it's interesting, like, everything comes back around.
You're still wrong for What the Fox Say.
Yes, Kevin hated that. Kevin really hated that.
You're still wrong for the puppets.
And Gangnam Style, too. Gangnam Style.
Okay, let's talk about these two songs,
please,
which I have been, Gangnam Style and What the Fox Says.
Let's do it.
I would like you to put yourself in my little brain.
I understand why you did it. I understand.
Okay, we had 22 episodes a year to fill, right? So when you're doing it and you're like, well,
might as well.
Sure.
What's at the top of the charts?
Yeah.
Like,
If
you look at that show, you can also look at like what was popular and what was classic. Like, it was a weird mixture. And yes, I will say Gangnam Style, not the best moment. But there was a reason why it was on there, because it was so incredibly popular.
Yes.
And Glee, in some regards, was like the jukebox musical of its day, the top of the pops. You could tune in to see what was popular.
Yes, that's right.
I don't know. Is that your least favorite number?
Kevin's is What's the Fox Say?
I felt like I was the last one to break out of the cast.
Yes.
The last one to lose it.
He was. Yes.
And that was my breaking point.
Yes, I saw it happen.
Because
I witnessed it.
I think it's because I don't know, but there was something about having puppets and doing that number, or I was just like, what fever dream? Like, what has happened?
It was a fever dream.
And there's an actual shot of me looking into the camera where I'm just like, mm-mm. I don't know. I think it was just because, like, okay, am I allowed to break now?
Yes.
Everyone else has broken.
It took a very long time for you.
My reaction. But I will say, do you remember, like, speaking of all the current music, like, people used to send you their music? Like, I remember Gaga sent you the Born This Way album because Brad and you guys walked back onto set, and Brad was like, oh yeah, we just, Lady Gaga's people brought us over their music. Falchuk, the straightest man on earth, talking about listening to Lady Gaga. And I was like, oh my God, how was it? You're like, and he was like, oh yeah, there's probably some hits on there. I'm like, where's Ryan? I need to know.
I knew exactly what the hits were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that was a very interesting period. And again,
Paul McCartney sent his music over.
Yep. I learned a lot from that period. That was a weird period where, when Glee became popular, that we could reach out to any artist in the world and they would pretty much say yes.
Except a few.
Yeah, but I also learned something like that from that. Like, that whole Kings of Leon thing, when that was the first rejection, I think, and I took it personally, and I gave an interview with a lot of hubris and a really big head and said really stupid things. And looking back on it, I feel like they were right. Like, you as an artist should be allowed to, you know, do with your music what you will, and I should never have said anything. I learned a lot of life lessons, and I was such a jerk in that interview. I don't even know why I said some stupid thing about depriving America's children of Kings of Leon.
Stop it.
I don't remember what
article
I said, but it was not good. Don't you remember? Then they came after me.
Yes, they did.
I was devastated.
Then we got nominated.
Wait, I love you. I love
we
you.
Got now we Grammy. Love Kings of Leon. Yeah.
We were sitting in the same row as them at the Grammys, and I was like, "Oh shit!" I was like, "This is embarrassing." I love you. Do you hate us?
We love.
I know. I had that moment with Dave Grohl, who I really love as an artist, and he spoke out against that interview. I don't know if you recall saying, like, "Who is this guy saying something?" And I was going to some another awful award show moment, and he was in front of me and turned around and goes, "Oh. Hi."
No.
Like, hi. I'm sorry. He goes, "It's all good." He was such a lovely guy is such a lovely guy. But again, things that you learn, like I never had any media training. I was just so thrilled to literally have Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Adele. Remember Adele?
Oh my God.
Adele would talk about her love of Glee.
Her love of Amber.
Yes.
Specifically.
And just like.
That was really cool. That was really
that was
cool.
Amazing. Like to be a part of those that experience with that level of artist, to have Stevie Nicks show up on set and send flowers. Remember that huge flower arrangement she sent that craft room we had?
That's wild.
She talked to us in the classroom, and
she was amazing.
All of the stars,
It was just like that really great period where as a fan you could say, or I could say, like, I wanted to do songs and pay tribute to people that I loved, like Barbara Streisand. You know, I got to meet Barbara because of Glee and become friends with her. So it was like past and present, but that show in a moment in time was an indisputable force in terms of, I would say, showcasing the love of music. And to me, that's what it really was about. It was about, I love music. Music is something that brings people together. It's a great equalizer. Mm-hmm. I, had the lead in every musical in high school. One of my great tragedies is that I did not become a pop music singer. What I really wanted to be was a pop music singer and or the editor in chief of Vogue. And I could not do either of them, which is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
But so, we know you can run a little bit. You would sing with us on set all the time.
Yes.
I can, actually. And by run, we mean, going up and down.
It's one run. But you got it.
Amber's like, you got it, Ryan. You got it.
I only could do one thing. But it was just fun. And that's the joy of that show is, I think, the love of music that even if you watch it, I think you can tell now, because I went back in preparation for this and watched some of the old episodes, and you can tell, like, oh, they really did love what they were doing.
Yes.
And they really did have a great appreciation and admiration for these artists, and we were interpreting them in different ways and mashing things up, and it was all like love letters to me.
Yes. Every song. Also, like,
except Gangnam Style, not a love letter.
No, not a
love letter. A 3 a.m. What are we going to do in here? But I still love that song. I do. I'm sorry. I love it.
Just PTSD.
Selfishly, I mean, that K-pop episode, I remember Brad turning to me. He's like, I heard you like K-pop. I was like, I love K-pop. He's like, what can we put in the background of the scene? I'm like, I'll send you a whole list. And I got my favorite K-pop artist in that episode.
You did?
Like, yes, yes.
Wow, okay, Kevin. Good.
We're like rehearsing to Big Bang, which was my favorite group at the time.
But
what
season was this?
I don't even know.
God.
3 or 4?
Must have been later. In the spirit of like artists and all these amazing people, what about the guest stars? And talk about the casting of the pilot as well. Like, were you pitched big names? Like, and what made you decide to go with all of us little unknown, girls?
Well, that was a wondrous, amazing casting session that I've really only had once since, and that was with the cast of Pose. It was a very similar idea, which was let's make stars. There's so much talent out there. Let's find people. When we were writing the pilot, I've never really talked about this. That pilot was written for Justin Timberlake.
Oh.
Mr. Shu was written for Justin.
Wait a second.
Hold up.
This is actually brand new information. I think we need to pause.
And we will talk about this next time.
So come back next week to hear the second part of our almost 3-hour conversation with Ryan Murphy, because
you don't want to miss it.
It's just getting started.
Jenna, is there any place better than Target?
No. So let's talk about Target Circle. It's the same program you know and love now with automatic deals.
Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target?
So now when you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout.
Plus, with the unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price. And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.